there are many branches of atheism we could explore, and really the branch of atheism we're particularly going to be engaging with is what has sometimes been called the new atheism, or militant atheism, or anti-theism. Christopher Hitchens is famous for saying, I've got two big things I want to say. One is that God doesn't exist, and two, I hate him. And it's that type of atheism that we're wanting to particularly be focusing on. And so some of these things may not be a fair representation of every branch or type of atheism, but at least it hopefully will be a representative of this new movement in the last few years. Outspoken public intellectuals have taken time to write very strongly against religion. Whether it is The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, Letter to a Christian Nation by Sam Harris, or God is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything, probably the best of the titles, by Christopher Hitchens. These militant atheists or fundamentalist atheists or new atheists or evangelistic atheists are a new force in our world, and actually even gathered just this last weekend in a convention in Melbourne to discuss and to reflect and to provide some kind of public presence on this question of anti-theism. To some extent, I can really welcome and understand the rise of this new atheism. In part, it's a response to a reaction against relativism that says, oh, everything's true. If it's true for you, that's fine. If it's true for me, that's fine. And whatever you believe is fine. And you might be a Christian, that's nice for you, that's true for you. Or you might be an atheist, and that's nice for you. And this kind of tolerance that I would stand together with the new atheist in saying it's kind of silly, because either there is actually a God or there isn't. And so if saying it's true for you is kind of dodging the question, it might be the polite thing to do in a dinner party conversation when you realise that the person you're chatting to is a religious nut, that you might say, well, it's true for you. But it dodges the real question, is there actually a God or not? And of the world religions, they cannot all be true, for they all make different claims about what God is like and what God does in the world. And so the new atheists respond to that and say, no, enough of this silly tolerance, silly relativism. Let's ask the question, is it true, is it not true? Enough also of a defence of religion which can lead to violence. I don't know how we could possibly understand the new atheism without referring to 9/11 and the change in the way we thought about our world and the place of religion in our world that came as a result of 9/11. Look at what religion can do. Wouldn't we be better off without it? And lastly, new atheism to some extent is a result, I suspect, of the growing realisation that religion just isn't dying. A generation ago, two generations ago, it was very popular to say eventually religion dies out as society becomes more civilised, more intellectual, more secular, more modern. Religion will fade. But as we reached the end of the 20th century, it became more and more clear that religion was here to stay, and that conservative religion, even fundamentalist religion, was on the rise, was experiencing rapid growth, and not just in more tribal, more primitive places, but even in our world's cities. And so atheism has, in a sense, responded again to say, hang on a second, what are we doing? What's going on with the human race? Are we turning back to religion? The two charges that come are the two charges that we'll be dealing with in these two lectures this week. Separate issues. On the one hand, religion is not good for society. It's not good. It poisons everything. And on the other hand, religion is not true. It is a God delusion. And I just want to say up front, those are separate issues. They are separate issues, and we need to deal with them separately. Religion may have bad results, and it may be a catalyst for extremism in society and some form of tribalism. It may have short-term negative consequences socially. It may be hard to reconcile with liberal democracy and yet still be actually true. On the other hand, religion may have good results, may console people, may renew and invigorate society, may inform morality, may motivate clarity of thought and reason, and yet still actually be false. They're separate questions, the truth and goodness of religion. If religion does good, yes, it contributes to an argument in favour of religion. And if religion does bad, that contributes to an argument against religion, and yet they are still separate issues. So first of all then, there's just a few headings I'm going to try and group our thoughts on today under, and the first of those is a word to Christians, and I think it's important for this to be the first word, a word to Christians, because these are criticisms of religion, but of Christianity often in particular, and it would be actions to be defensive and reactive without first hearing the criticisms. Christian, chapter 1, commands you to be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Your scriptures tell you to do that. And so we must be quick to listen and slow to speak when it comes to the criticisms of the new atheists. Many of these people are extremely intelligent, extremely well-travelled, older than most of us. The things they are writing resonate with millions of people. So be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. As a Christian, you are almost kind of wired to ignore what these writers have to say. And so we need to correct against that and be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. We need to bear in mind that these writers in particular, I will be dealing a lot with Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, today, but all of these writers are writing a particular style of writing, polemics. It's not just cold, flat philosophy. It's not just a textbook or science book. In a sense, it's not even balanced completely. It is, and Dawkins is very upfront about this, it's an evangelistic tract. He is writing to convert. He is writing to persuade. He's writing to recruit. And even for a Christian to read the book is a little eerie, because we're used to our little evangelistic Christian tracts that have books in the back that we suggest people read, and who you can maybe call and how to find a local church. He's got all of that in The God Delusion. He's got the societies who can help you get free from religion, and the books he suggests that you read if you want to find out more. Christian, you should be familiar with that genre, shouldn't you? That style of speaking, shouldn't you? That's what your evangelists do, isn't it? That's what your popular Christian authors do, isn't it? It's colourful. It's forceful. It's often a little unfair, and the rhetoric is slightly stronger than the sloppy logic will allow. Dawkins spoofs it at one point in this book when he lists a bunch of arguments for the existence of God. And to be honest, I've kind of gotten Christian chain emails that are pretty similar to some of these. Here are the arguments for the existence of God that he lists in The God Delusion. The argument from incomplete devastation. A plane crashed, killing 143 passengers and crew. But one child survived with only third-degree burns, therefore God exists. Or the argument from possible worlds. If things had been different, things would be different. That would be bad, therefore God exists. Argument 38, the argument from sheer will. I do believe in God, I do believe in God, I do, therefore God exists. Argument 39, the argument from non-belief. The majority of the world's population do not believe in Christianity. That is just what Satan intended. Therefore God exists. Argument 40, from post-death experience. Person X died an atheist. He now realises his mistake. Therefore God exists. And so on. We're used to that kind of passionate, charged, emotional logic, and we love it when it's the Christian critiquing the atheist. So we need to at least return the courtesy and allow that style of speaking and writing. He's writing, moreover, from a particular worldview. They're writing from a particular worldview. He may be criticised, Dawkins, for not knowing the ins and outs of theology, and that's a fair criticism. Sometimes he just doesn't handle them well. That's a fair criticism. But his response is, why worry about the quality of the material if the emperor has no clothes? That's his response. he's arguing from a point of view which says that those things which cannot be rationally, empirically tested are not really justified to be believed. He's arguing from that position. The only truth possible to know or believe must be tested empirically. And from within that worldview is presenting a strong case for its coherence. And so we need to feel that style of argument, that it's building, it's cumulative, it's colourful, it's evocative, it's playful, it's here's a quote from this blog there, and here's a bit of a survey here, and here's a story there. Building a picture of the coherence of the atheist view and argument and outlook. Taking the worst examples of religion, not to say necessarily that all religious people are like that, but in order to say that's the kind of trajectory that these atheists believe religion is on. We might not all be as extreme, but we're all on the same road. To hear it, you've got to hear it out. You know what they say about you can't, you know, criticise someone until you've walked a mile in their shoes, because you're a mile away then and you've got their shoes. You can't respond to the new atheist until you've heard generously what they're saying. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Listen and even dare enjoy where the humour is sharp and where the critique is fair. Hear it, enjoy it even, and repent, Christian. Or Christian irrationality, Christian sloppiness, Christian cruelty, Christian judgmentalism. Dawkins lists a bunch of the extreme letters that he's received from so-called Christians around the world. And here are some samples. These are samples of letters written to Brian Fleming, the author of God Who Wasn't There. You've definitely got some nerve. I'd love to take a knife and gut you, fools. Scream with joy as your insides spill out in front of you. You're attempting to ignite a holy war in which someday I and others like me may have the pleasure of taking action, like the above mentioned. However, God teaches us not to seek vengeance, but to pray for those like you all. Dawkins writes, his charity is short-lived. For he goes on to say, I'll get comfort in knowing the punishment God will bring to you will be 1,000 times worse than anything I can inflict. The best part is that you will suffer for eternity for these sins that you've completely been ignorant about. The wrath of God will show no mercy for your sake. I hope the truth is revealed before the knife connects with your flesh. Merry Christmas. Satan-worshipping scum, another letter writes, please die and go to hell. I hope you get a painful disease like rectal cancer and die a slow, painful death so you can meet your God, Satan. It's nasty, right? Very nasty. And it's extreme. That's the extreme end of things. But religious people are capable, so-called Christian people are capable of massive judgmentalism. And when they're protecting their own patch, suddenly all the teachings of their master are forgotten. And there is harshness, a cruelty, a meanness that insofar as we belong to the Christian community, we ought to repent of. Religious people have done appalling things. So-called Christians, even truly confessing Christians, have done appalling things, shameful things, things which should cause us as the Christian community to be humbled. Jesus himself said in the famous verses in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 to 4, he said, do not judge or you will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? We need to hear, acknowledge, and repent for the disgusting things that Christians have done and said. Is religion bad? The second heading I want to gather things under today. Why is religion bad from Dawkins' point of view? I've got a string of reasons here, 6 reasons. First of all, because religion is irrational, non-rational, if not irrational. It's non-rational, if not irrational. And he often picks the worst examples to make the point that the religious mind has a necessary non-religious bent to it. Here's how he describes it again in the God Delusion. Fundamentalists know they are right. They've read the truth in a holy book and they know in advance that nothing will budge them from their belief. The truth of the holy book is an axiom, not the end product of a process of reasoning. The book is true, and if the evidence seems to contradict it, it's the evidence that must be thrown out, not the book. By contrast, what I as a scientist believe, I believe not because of reading a holy book, but because I've studied the evidence. It really is a different matter. Books about evolution are believed not because they are holy, they are believed because they present overwhelming quantities of mutually buttressed evidence. In principle, any reader can go and check the evidence. When a science book is wrong, somebody eventually discovers the make and it is corrected, which never happens with the holy books. I am passionate about my beliefs. How could I not be? But my belief in evolution is not fundamentalism. It is not faith, because I know what it would take to change my mind, and I would gladly do so if the necessary evidence were forthcoming. Christianity is irrational, if not irrational, which is a bad thing. If you're a scientific naturalist such as Dawkins, who believes that reason and scientific reasoning is actually the only type of reasoning which is justified, it is especially bad. 2. Religion appeals to a higher, unquestionable authority, which is a dangerous thing to give to a human. Corrupt humans, selfish humans, tribal humans, to then give them a belief which gives them an unquestionable authority is a reckless thing. It's a dangerous thing. It's part of what lies behind the views of democracy that, for example, the American country was built on, was not so much that the voting public is eminently wise, but just that they're as stupid and corrupt as everyone, and so it's best to enable them to be able to vote the leaders out every few years. That democracy is the worst form of government, except for every single other form of government, because power corrupts. So what do you do when you give human beings appeal to an unquestionable higher authority, God? He quotes from Sam Harris along these lines, reflecting on the London bombings and on 9/11. Sam Harris says, "The answer to the question of why the World Trade Center was destroyed is obvious," Sam Harris writes, "if only because it has been patiently articulated ad nauseam by Bin Laden himself. The answer is that men like Bin Laden actually believe what they say they believe. They believe in the literal truth of the Quran. Why did 19 well-educated middle-class men trade their lives in this world for the privilege of killing thousands of our neighbours? Because they believed they would go straight to paradise for doing so. It's rare to find the behaviour of humans so fully and satisfactorily explained. Why have we been so reluctant to accept this explanation?" Another journalist Dawkins quotes, Muriel Gray, who writes, "Everyone is being blamed for the London bombings. George Bush, Tony Blair, the inactive Muslim community. But it has never been clearer that there is only one place to lay the blame, and it has ever been thus. The cause of all this misery, mayhem and violence, terror and ignorance is religion itself. And if it seems ludicrous to have to state such an obvious reality, the fact is that the government and the media are doing a pretty good job of pretending it isn't so." A higher unquestionable authority may make for courage, but it may also make for corruption, for violence, for murder. 3. Religion is bad because it is irrational or non-rational, because it appeals to a higher authority, because it is paternalistic. It creates a father figure whose will is good for everybody because he's the loving father of everybody, and whose will is demanded of all his children everywhere, for they are all his children. And any private person's business is a sin to that father, and he can see and know, and so even people's private business is God's business. It's why it seems that monotheistic religion tends to favour a right-wing view of government to some extent, perhaps, because here is an interest in legislating for people's moral behaviour. Four, the tribalising and fanatical effect religion can have. Dawkins talks about the conflicts in Ireland as a launching-off point here to reflect on the tribalising effect of religion. And he says this, religion is a label of in-group, out-group, enmity and vendetta, not necessarily worse than other labels, such as skin colour, language or football team, but often available when other labels are not. Yes, there are troubles in Northern Ireland for political reasons. There really has been economic and political oppression of one group by another, and it does go back centuries. There really are genuine grievances and injustices, and these seem to have little to do with religion, except that, and this is important and widely overlooked, without religion there would be no labels by which to decide whom to oppress and whom to avenge. And the real problem in Northern Ireland is the labels are inherited down many generations. Catholics, whose parents, grandparents and great-grandparents went to Catholic schools, send their children to Catholic schools. Protestants, whose parents and so forth. From Kosovo, he writes, to Palestine, from Iraq to Sudan, from Ulster to the Indian subcontinent, look carefully at any region of the world and you find intractable enmity and violence between rival groups. I cannot guarantee you'll find religions as the dominant labels, but it's a very good bet. Throughout the book is just a whole bunch, and throughout many of the critiques of religion, is just a whole bunch of specific beliefs and specific practices of religious people that are then pointed out and said, religions believe this, religions promote that, religions teach this, therefore they're bad, because these things are bad and they shouldn't be taught. Often the argument really is no more than, religion thinks this, I disagree, therefore religion must be stopped. Homosexuality, pro-life beliefs, beliefs about blasphemy or pornography or capital punishment or right-wing politics or intelligent design or eternal hell. Religion believes those things. I don't believe those things. Religion is bad. And sixth, at various points in all of these books, actual effects of religion are highlighted, actual consequences, such as wars and intractable in-group, out-group violence. Even more perhaps anecdotal, or there's examples given of religious communities where when the police went on strike, the whole community went haywire. A survey from America where some of the highest cities for crime and violence and so forth, and murder, come in strong Republican states, which if you know, Christianity and Republican politics are tied, doesn't look so good, perhaps. So religion may provide philosophical ground for morality. Maybe. But it doesn't seem to promote any sociological motivation, they write. It may give some kind of moral code, but it doesn't seem to actually make people better, they will argue. Religion is not something nice that you might like to believe if you want to believe it, and it's good that some believe it and you believe it and that's good for you. They want to say religion itself has tendencies and flaws and a framework of thinking and living that make it almost necessarily negative, destructive and bad. It's a cheerful topic, isn't it? You chose to come. You don't have to do this for your coursework. What does a Christian say to that? Is that game over? Perhaps for some of you, that some of those arguments are very strong, and in your thinking and your religious views, they really seal the deal for you. Perhaps as a Christian, you're encountering those things more and more, and you hear some of these writers speak, or you've got close friends who have strong views against religion, and you feel the force of it. You feel a little like the Christians on Q&A a few weeks ago who feel pretty apologetic and pretty held back before the barrage of critique from these new atheists. Is there a response that can be made? Well, my final heading, I want to try and give something of a response. I think again, no, this time in 5 points, not six. One. It needs to keep being stated that Dawkins and Hitchens and Harris have a narrow definition of what is rational and what can be believed as true. Dawkins and co. have a definition, a narrow definition of what is rational and can be believed as true. It is that which is scientifically testable and verifiable. The only truth that is permissible to be known by humans is that which can be empirically tested. It's important to state that because that is in itself not empirically testable. It is in itself an axiom to begin from. It's a starting point. A starting point that in some ways can be as strong in affecting the outcome as religious belief. For if I lie strongly in this sort of empirically testable outlook, then I'm left a little like Temperance Brennan, a.k.a. Bones, or for an older generation, a little like Dana Scully, who is left seeing a miracle take place and having to say, there must be a rational explanation. We just don't know what it is yet. Holding this view, if a miracle did happen, if it actually happened, ought not be believed, because it would be more rational to hold out for an empirical explanation. So it is as binding, it may be right, but it's as binding, if you like, as a starting point for reason. It's an approach to thought and to reason that leaves out other forms of coming to believe something as true. Coherence, explanatory power, intuitive fit. All these are rational, if not empirical, in mind. Two, we cannot, I don't think, ultimately judge something by its tendencies. Not only is it so very hard to do accurately, but also it is not a complete evaluation. You see, Christians argue that atheism has inbuilt tendencies to cruelty, to immorality, to totalitarianism, because if there is no greater father figure, if there is no higher cause, then we are it. Then the government is it. Then our own opinions are it. Christians will argue that atheism has an inbuilt tendency in one direction, and may even point to the history of the 20th century as an example of a bloody era dominated by people who are philosophically, or at least functionally, atheistic. But Dawkins rejects the charge. He writes, "Atheist? Hitler probably wasn't. But even if he was, the bottom line of the Stalin-Hitler debating point is simple. Individual atheists may do evil things, but they don't do evil things in the name of atheism." He avoids the accusation. He says, it's not fair. I won't let it stick. And again, he will say, no, yeah, you can throw mud if you like. It's like some sort of scare campaign in an election. But come on, let's deal with truth here. And yet it feels like the rules are a little different when it comes to religion. When it comes to religion, it feels like any tendency it has to paternalism or irrationality or authoritarianism or tribalization makes religion bad. But any possible tendency atheism has is just that individual atheist, or is their particular philosophical brand of atheism. Now, I want to say it goes both ways. Now, I've got to say that, yes, there is something there, but you cannot build a watertight case against Christianity or against atheism, simply built on its tendencies. And we must acknowledge that both have tendencies for good, I think. Three, we must recognize in comparing, especially in comparing atheism and Christianity, we must recognize the difference between a movement or an ideal and an institution or a label. And the quote I just read, Dawkins is really saying, no, atheism must be evaluated as an ideal, as a movement, not by any particular political representation, not by any particular philosophical representation, whether it be the Nazi eugenics or the Stalinist communism. No. You must look at the trajectory of atheism as a free-thinking, human-centered, enlightenment humanist project. We must look at it as a movement. Which makes it a little like comparing apples and oranges. Because let's take religion, structure, institution, bishops, church, all who have the label Christian in any sense, and then compare that to a dynamic movement of the best in atheism. It ain't fair. It's just not fair. What we must do if we're going to play that game is either take all labels and institutions of atheism, and so therefore give the full weight of the horror of Stalinist Russia and many other such horror stories of atheism. We must take all the examples of atheism institutionally and label as well as those of religion. Or what we must do is allow Christianity also to be evaluated at its most vibrant, at its ideal, at its most fresh and renewed, rather than its most fossilized and entrenched and sickly. Perhaps we would be better to then look at movements of regeneration and renewal, such as, for example, the great social transformations in England of the 18th century that were brought about by a Protestant revival in the country, that had massive influences on the treatment of in the law courts of slaves, of children, of women. A whole renewal took place, Christianity at its best. Four, we must evaluate Christianity according to Christianity's social vision. We must evaluate Christianity according to Christianity's social vision. And Christianity's social vision is primarily church and family, not state. Christianity's social vision, if we open up the books of the New Testament and see the vision that Christianity has for society and its good, it is church and family, not state. Evaluating Islam would be different. To evaluate Islam, I suspect we do have to consider the Muslim vision for the state. But for Christians to struggle with our vision for the state, for government, for Christians to wrestle with how best to do that, and how to live in harmony with a liberal democracy, for example, how to live in a world of pluralism and modernism, for Christianity to have to wrestle with in previous ages being the socially dominant government, for example, during the Middle Ages, and having to wrestle with the implications that that has, a Christian's not surprised that it's not always perfect, that sometimes it's messy, sometimes it's wrong. Because Christianity was not primarily given, and that the Christian scripture is not primarily given to construct public policy for a secular state. And so the fact that there is lack of clarity there and missteps there, not surprising. Or on the other hand, the fact that Christianity has been able to innovate and adapt and translate to many different societies and cultures and governments and systems, and even innovate new ways of thinking about government and its relationship to the people. Perhaps that also lies at the heart of Christianity's flexibility on its vision for government. If you really want to critique Christianity's effect, you've got to come to it on its level, not whatever general effect it may have on a government or a society, but look at its effect on family and on church. Look at it again at its most alive, at its most genuine, at its most authentic. It's not surprising that many of the horror stories you read of religion in many of these books just ring so false to the average Christian's experience of the churches that they live in. Because the extreme ends of religion are the extreme ends. And the heart of your average church, however flawed it may be, is a massive eagerness to give to charity, a massive keenness to welcome those who are the stranger and the alien, a massive desire to adopt those who don't have parents, to help assimilate those who move from other countries to live, a massive desire to serve those who are poor and to switch on when the person comes to give a presentation about a water project in India. The extreme end is alien to the Christian. Watch the Christianity's effect on church life, on family life, on local community life. Watch the Christian engagement with social work and desire to give generously of volunteer time to social work. Watch Christians in their kindness and in their joy in giving away their wealth to others. Watch them in their far greater willingness to live alongside those who are so different from them in their beliefs and their lifestyles. You can say, look at religions, Christians, and all the bad things they do. Atheists aren't like that. But then, far more people are religious in our societies than atheists. And so we've got a much larger sample of horror stories. And in our society, at least, atheism tends to be dominated by the higher educated, for whatever that reason might be. And so the crimes we compare are often very different. The white-collar crime, perhaps, compared to other forms of crimes. And atheism rarely organises itself, except when it has another philosophy or ideology that it's attached to. The opposite, you see. Look at all the good things that people do because they are religious. The food they give, the care they provide, the societies and the marriages and the families that they are committed to. That needs to be allowed. And five, I won't expand on this, but it's just important to say that in these discussions, it is very important to separate different types of morality. Fundamentalist morality, religious morality more generally, which may not be as harsh or as narrow as fundamentalist morality. Fundamentalist morality, religious morality, humanist morality, which is a particular type of atheism, humanist morality with its focus on freedom and non-interference. Atheist morality, which in a sense is amorality, non-morality, and then just morality. We must separate each of those out. We must recognise not all atheism is humanism. We must recognise not all religion is fundamentalism. And we must actually have moral conversation. It is not self-evident that pro-life or pro-choice is right. It's not self-evident that a particular stance on the gay question is right. It's not self-evident. We need to have the conversation civilly, thoughtfully, rationally, and not just throw labels. To conclude, is religion good or bad? I think maybe what I've said has muddied the waters in the right way. By saying, really, is religion good or bad? It's almost impossible to answer. It would be so difficult to test conclusively. Yes, religion does have certain bad tendencies. Yes, many people who are religious do bad things. Yes, people can be very good and noble without being religious. But also, religious can be an enormous motivator for good, for the most noble actions of humanity. Religion at its best avoids the bad tendencies and has many positive personal and social effects. And perhaps the reason religion is so pervasive and atheism is, it seems, restricted more to a kind of intellectual elite. Perhaps this is because humans are incurably religious. Perhaps it takes a stubborn force of will and of intellect to override that intuition. Perhaps this is because we actually as made in the image of God, have a God sense. Have a sense of purpose and meaning and good and right, which is not merely evolved alone, but which is drawn from one who is ultimately good and right and loving and valuable. The reason that religion can be used to justify horror is because we all walk away from that sense, as the scripture says, there's no one righteous, not even one. We're all in need of forgiveness. And the Christian message is, of course, the great message of forgiveness to people who have turned away from their recognition of who God is and turned to Him for mercy. Relevant in the slightest, all depends on it being true. So I'll need to see you tomorrow, Thursday night, that question.